Fingers crossed. VOA won the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Anna Mateo and Andrew Smith tell us about the important work of people known as waste pickers. Brian Lynn presents this week's Science Report. We close with the next part of our U.S. History series. But first, here are Anna and Andrew.
Along the streets of Malabon in the Philippines, Marilyn Capentes pushes a cart every morning, except Sundays. The city of Malabon is just north of the capital, Manila. Capentes is a waste picker. She collects bags of separated garbage, placing food waste in one container. This material will be turned into compost at the local recycling facility. The rest of the waste goes into separate containers. The recyclable materials are later sold. Capentes said the heavy garbage used to be all mixed together. Then, a few years ago, a local environmental nonprofit started asking people to separate their garbage.
The Mother Earth Foundation in the Philippines is a member of the Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives, called GAIA. The organization wants to prevent food waste from going to landfills. Food waste gives off methane gas as it breaks down. Methane is a powerful greenhouse gas. Methane traps more heat than carbon dioxide, but it does not stay in the atmosphere nearly as long, around 12 years compared with hundreds of years. Gaia says preventing organic waste from going to landfills or being burned is a proven and cost-effective climate solution. The environmental organization supports its members, including waste pickers, around the world. GAIA is working with governments to set up systems to separate and collect organic waste and establish facilities to compost it.
At a materials recycling facility in Malabon, organic waste collected from households is turned into compost. This material then goes into a community garden to grow vegetables. Some of the food waste is broken down into biogas. This biogas is then used to cook vegetables for waste workers to eat. It is a complete cycle, said Froilan Grate, chief of GAIA, Asia Pacific, based in Manila. Grate said there are challenges in establishing these systems in new places. It costs money to set up a facility for composting. People, including local officials, have to be educated on the importance of separating waste. Containers have to be provided to households that cannot buy more than one. And sometimes separating organic waste is not thought to be important. Also, unlike recyclables and metals, there is not a large market for organic materials. Therefore, waste workers must be paid for the system to work.
But Gratte believes these problems can be solved. More people are making the connection between reducing methane and fighting climate change. The world needs better systems for dealing with waste because the current methods are adding to warming, said Kate Siegel. She leads the methane pollution prevention team at the environmental nonprofit Clean Air Task Force. She said the treatment of organic matter is an important way to reduce methane gas. We've seen these solutions make a difference in countries around the world, she said. We're all creating organic waste in our day-to-day lives. The Global Methane Pledge, launched in November 2021, has pushed countries to examine their sources of methane. More than 100 countries, including the United States, have agreed to reduce methane emissions by 30% by 2030. However, other countries that produce large amounts of methane refused.
Brazil is one of the world's five largest methane creators. Since President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva took office in January, there has been growing support for waste pickers, waste recycling, and fighting climate change, said Victor Hugo Argentina de Moraes Vieira. He is a waste advisor and researcher at Instituto Polês, a non-governmental, non-profit organization in Brazil. In Bahia, a popular tourist area, a large composting site has been operating for years. Waste pickers there developed a system for their work collecting organic garbage from hotels and restaurants. But few other waste pickers collect food waste. In South Africa, it is also not common to separate organic waste. But for the past 2 years, the idea has been tested at a large market in the port city of Durban. It can be a game changer for the continent, said Niven Reddy, the African regional coordinator for Gaia. It can be tested and tried. If it works in Africa in one place, it's likely to work someplace else. 400,000 people go through that market a day. Gaia leaders, like Reddy, are looking to the systems established in the Philippines as a model. I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
A new study predicts continued warming will lead to more intense and deadlier storms hitting parts of the United States. Scientists say higher temperatures are expected to cause an increase in so-called supercell storms. Weather scientists say supercells can bring high winds, heavy rain, hail, and tornadoes. The new study was recently published in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. It predicted a nationwide increase of 6.6% in the number of supercells by 2100. The study said there could be a 25.8% increase in areas affected by supercells, as well as in the amount of time the storms last. The study's writers say some areas of the U.S. South can expect more intense storms. Rolling Fork, Mississippi, was hit by a powerful and deadly tornado recently. Storms that hit areas of Mississippi and Alabama since March 24th killed at least 21 people. The new study projected that the American South would get at least one supercell per year by the year 2100. Here are some examples of past supercell events. A 2013 tornado killed 51 people in Moore, Oklahoma. In 2011, a tornado in Joplin, Missouri, killed 161 people. And in the same year, tornadoes killed more than 320 people in Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, and other parts of the South. The study used computer simulations. A computer used a model to predict what will happen 73 years from now with different levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Walker Ashley is a professor of disaster geography at Northern Illinois University. He told the Associated Press that people are already living with more serious storms. "The data that I've seen has persuaded me that we are in this experiment and living it right now," Ashley said. "What we're seeing in the longer term is actually occurring right now." Ashley and others said that while the Mississippi tornado fits the projections, it was just a single weather event. This is different from making climate predictions over many years covering large areas. Past studies have not been able to predict supercells and tornadoes in future climate simulations because they are small weather events. The study identified large changes in where and when the storms hit. The researchers said more intense storms are to be expected in the eastern United States. If warming is more moderate, the study predicts parts of eastern Mississippi and eastern Oklahoma will get three more supercells every 2 years. In addition, eastern Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, Alabama, western Tennessee, and eastern Georgia can expect to get one more supercell every other year. If warming is serious, the study projects similar changes, but with worsening supercells over eastern Oklahoma, Arkansas, and southern Missouri. Ashley said cities that should see more supercells as warming worsens include Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Memphis, and Nashville, Tennessee, Tupelo and Jackson, Mississippi, and Birmingham, Alabama. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk about this week's science report. Hi, Brian. Thanks for being here.
Sure, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Your report was about a satellite that NASA recently launched to study all water that exists on Earth. How is the new satellite able to measure water better than other satellites and instruments?
So NASA researchers explained that the main difference is that the new satellite can observe much larger areas than past measuring methods. Traditionally, scientists used instruments called altimeters to map surface water on Earth. But those instruments can only observe very narrow areas directly beneath them, making research difficult for larger bodies of water, such as the ocean.
You mentioned the ocean, but the story points out that the new satellite is also designed to map all other sources of water on Earth. This means the instruments must be sensitive enough to also collect data on much smaller bodies of water, correct?
Yes, the satellite is able to measure bodies of water as small as 100 meters wide. And overall, the researchers say being able to collect detailed data on the world's water will help them learn more about how the water supply is influencing climate change.
Thanks for answering those questions, Brian, and thanks again for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The early years of the 20th century were a time of movement for many black Americans. Traditionally, most blacks lived in the southeastern states. But in the 1920s, many blacks moved to cities in the north. Black Americans moved because living conditions were so poor in the rural areas of the Southeast. But many of them discovered that life was also hard in the colder northern cities. Jobs often were hard to find. Housing was poor, and whites sometimes acted violently against them. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell about the life of black Americans in the 1920s and how they helped form traditions.
The years just before and after 1920 were difficult for blacks. It was a time of racial hatred. Many whites joined the Ku Klux Klan organization. The Klan often terrorized blacks. Klan members sometimes burned fiery crosses in front of the houses of black families, and they sometimes beat and murdered blacks. The Ku Klux Klan also acted against Roman Catholics, Jews, and foreigners, but it hated blacks most of all.
The United States also suffered a series of race riots in a number of cities during this period. White and black Americans fought each other in Omaha, Philadelphia, and other cities. The worst riot was in Chicago. A swimming incident started the violence. A black boy sailing a small boat entered a part of the beach used by white swimmers. Some white persons threw stones at the boy. He fell into the water and drowned. Black citizens heard about the incident and became extremely angry. Soon, black and white mobs were fighting each other in the streets. The violence lasted for 2 weeks. 38 persons died. More than 500 were wounded. The homes of hundreds of families were burned. The violence in Chicago and other cities did not stop black Americans from moving north or west. They felt that life had to be better than in the South.
Black Americans left the South because life was hard, economic chances few, and white hatred common. But many blacks arrived in other parts of the country only to learn that life was no easier. Some blacks wrote later that they had only traded the open racism of the rural Southeast for the more secret racism of northern cities. Blacks responded to these conditions in different ways. Some blacks followed the ideas of Booker T. Washington, the popular black leader of the early 1900s. Washington believed that blacks had to educate and prepare themselves to survive in American society. He helped form a number of training schools where blacks could learn skills for better jobs, and he urged blacks to establish businesses and improve themselves without causing trouble with whites. Other blacks liked the stronger ideas of William Du Bois. Du Bois felt that blacks had to take firm actions to protest murders and other illegal actions. He published a magazine and spoke actively for new laws and policies to protect black rights. Du Bois also helped form a group that later became the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. The NAACP became one of the nation's leading black rights organizations in the 20th century.
Probably the most important leader for black Americans in the 1920s did not come from the United States. He was Marcus Garvey from the Caribbean island of Jamaica. Garvey moved to New York City in 1916. He quickly began organizing groups in black areas. His message was simple. He said blacks should not trust whites. Instead, they should be proud of being black and should help each other. Garvey urged blacks to leave the United States, move to Africa, and start their own nation. Marcus Garvey organized several plans to help blacks become economically independent of whites. His biggest effort was a shipping company to trade goods among black people all over the world. Many American blacks gave small amounts of money each week to help Garvey start the shipping company. However, the idea failed. Government officials arrested Garvey for collecting the money unlawfully. They sent him to prison in 1925, and 2 years later, President Coolidge ordered Garvey out of the country. Marcus Garvey's group was the first major black organization in the United States to gain active support from a large number of people. The organization failed, but it did show the anger and lack of hope that many blacks felt about their place in American society.
Blacks also showed their feelings through writing, art, and music. The 1920s were one of the most imaginative periods in the history of American black art. Claude McKay, Langston Hughes, and County Cullen were three of the leading black poets during this time. McKay was best known for his poems of social protest. Hughes produced poems about black life that experts now say are among the greatest American poems ever written. Black writers also produced longer works. Among the leading black novelists were Jesse Fawcett, Jean Toomer, and Rudolph Fisher.
The 1920s also were an exciting time for black music. Black musicians playing the piano developed the ragtime style of music. Singers and musicians produced a sad, emotional style of playing that became known as the blues. And most important, music lovers began to play and enjoy a new style that was becoming known as jazz. Jazz advanced greatly as a true American kind of music in the 1920s. Musicians Louis Armstrong, Duke Ellington, and UB Blake played in gathering places and small theaters. White musicians and music experts from universities came to listen. Soon, the music became popular among Americans of all kinds and around the world.
Blacks began to recognize in the 1920s their own deep roots in the United States. They began to see just how much black men and women already had done to help form American history and traditions. The person who did the most to help blacks understand this was black historian Carter G. Woodson. Woodson received his training at two leading universities, Harvard in Massachusetts and the Sorbonne in France. He launched a new publication, the Journal of Negro History, in which he and other experts wrote about black life and history. Historians today call Woodson the father of the scientific study of black history.
The 1920s also were a period in which a number of blacks experimented with new political ideas and parties. The difficult social conditions of the period led many blacks to search for new political solutions. Two leftist parties, the Socialists and the Communists, urged blacks to leave the traditional political system and work for more extreme change. Two leading black socialists, Chandler Owen and A. Philip Randolph, urged blacks to support socialist candidates. However, they gained little popular support from blacks. Communists also tried to organize black workers, but generally, black voters showed little interest in communist ideas. The most important change in black political thinking during the 1920s came within the traditional two-party system itself. Blacks usually had voted for Republicans since the days of Abraham Lincoln. But the conservative Republican policies of the 1920s caused many blacks to become Democrats. By 1932, blacks would vote by a large majority for the Democratic presidential candidate, Franklin Roosevelt, and blacks continue to be a major force in the Democratic Party.
that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.